You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Florida, which is just south of Orlando. Welcome to All Marine Radio. An expeditionary week. And flying back to California today, actually this evening. So going to head down to a place called Northport, Florida, and watch the New York Yankees take on the Atlanta Braves in an exhibition baseball game. So I'm fired up about that. Yeah. I knew I could find a way to spend the day in Florida. So, yeah, going to go down the ball game. I don't know how long I can stay. Probably not that long, but the best players don't play for more than about 90 minutes, so I think it'll all work out. And plus, the real fun of going to spring training is going early, because you have major league players in a minor league complex, and it's all pretty small. But I've never been to anything spring training-wise here in Florida. The only time I've ever seen spring training is in Arizona, so I'm kind of looking forward to that. And so it should be a fun day, and then fly home. Get to see Jack and Joe. Yeah. See what damage they've done to my house, which will always be Joe's fault. He'll get in trouble for that. But anyhow, so good morning on a Friday morning. The last Friday of the month of February. And when we come back on Monday, it'll be March. Yeah, don't forget leap year. Sunday's February 29th, right? There you have it, February 29th. So, yeah, that reminder to you, courtesy of our planners here at All Marine Radio, which we don't really have. So, anyway, I don't know why I noticed leap year a few weeks ago. So, I figure I've been extolling the my calendar, you know, capabilities because of that. Yesterday here in Orlando. I got up to go to the Air Force is having a symposium here. And when the Air Force does things, man, they're big things. Yeah, they have, you know, Air Force, Space Force. So when you think of the Space Force is almost like the Marine Corps. Well, I mean, it is. It is a department of the Air Force, right? So the Department of the Navy has the United States Navy and the United States Marine Corps in it, right? And that's where the old joke is begat, right? You know what department, you know, Navy people say, you know you're part of the Navy Department, right? And the response is, yeah, we know that. You know what part we are? You know which department we are? And the response is, what? We're the men's department. We're the men's department, right? And so it goes, right? It never ends. So, yeah, the Air Force is very much the same. So you have people like Elon Musk there. Yeah, like, whoa. Yeah, when we're talking space, Elon Musk, Tesla guy and all that. But anyway, so they flew in key spouses from all over the world to come to this thing. And guess who was the speaker that had the most time there? Yeah, yours truly. So, I mean, I looked at the schedule. I was like, whoa, what an honor. What an honor. And that all gets laid at the feet of the wife of the chief of staff of the Air Force, the commandant of the Air Force. And his name is Dave Goldman, general type. And her name is Dawn. And I met her via Ellen Dunford at the Pentagon almost a year ago. And Dawn Goldfein has been one of the greatest proponents of post-traumatic winning. And to the extent that it's been in the Air Force, it all gets laid at her feet, and it's going to get more into the Air Force. So, but anyway, so I got up yesterday morning, and I was fired up. I've been rehearsing post-traumatic winning all week because I had to do a condensed version of it. And that's hard for me. And you try to put in breaks. And so, you know, I'm clipping stuff. And I think I've told you before, but the key when I do this is not to cut content. But it's, you just got to do the Reader's Digest version of it, which is for me is difficult. I'm not going to lie to you. So, anyway, so been working all week to try to, you know, the thought in my head is powerful and succinct, powerful and succinct, powerful and succinct when I do that. So anyway, I get up and I figure, you know, I wasn't scheduled to speak till 1 o'clock, 1300 to all you military types. So, I thought, well, I'll go and I'll watch Dawn speak to open it. Her husband spoke about an hour later, he and the Master Chief of the Air Force, Master Chief Wright. And, so I got up and I can't remember the name of the resort where this thing was. It's a huge resort. I mean, let me tell you, around this area, all you have is resorts, you know. Disney World fired up this part of the world. All it is things that leech off Disneyland in a positive, you know, capitalistic economic way. But anyway, this thing is beautiful, big, old, you know, resort. But there's only one way in. So, you know, I go and it's going to start at 8. So I'm there about 7:35. And there is this line to get into this thing. And so I think, well, there's got to be a second way in, right? And so I drive past the entrance, and I'm looking for, like, is there a turnaround spot? Is there anything? Answer, no. So I get in line, and then you just got to wait your turn, right? And you're in these line. And then you have the jackasses that pull up to the front and then like swerve their car into it in front of a car. And then, yeah. So I wait my turn line and some dude tries to do that. And I just put my hand on my horn and I stayed right behind the car in front of me until he turned his head. And then we made eye contact and I shook my head and I said, no. And he tried to do it anyway. There was a cop at the intersection. So now we're turning left into the resort complex, and it's, you know, got this long, you know, driveway down to the complex. And this thing's humongous, right? This complex is humongous, but it's only got one road in and out, which is, obviously they did it for security reasons, but yeah, it's kind of, you would think. But anyway, he tries to now go parallel with me and turn, and the cop just looks at him and puts his hand out. And the guy rolls his window, says something, and the guy just, cop just motions his hand, like, get out of here. And I was like, yeah, boom. Right? Wait your turn, loser. So anyway, then I did my breathing exercise. Hold for a second. done with that. I probably should have done it before, but I mean, come on, that irritated me. So anyway, I got over that, and you know, I get to I find where I'm supposed to go in this huge, and there was a couple different conventions going on, one for the prescription drug industry, and then the other, there's, you know, Air Force people everywhere. So I just followed them, and then I followed women. I said, "Are you going to the Key Wife thing?" They said, "Yeah." I said, "Okay." So I just followed them, and, you know, I find the place. And I don't rightly know how many hundred people were there. I'd probably say about 600. I'm not sure. Key spouses from all over the world. And so listen to Dawn Goldfein speak. And she has this... she's from Texas, I think. She's a military brat. So was he. They met, I think, in high school. And, yeah, one of those kind of stories. But she's funny, she's smart, and she's self-deprecating, which is a combination that I find, if you know, in public is really awesome, right? And so she gets up, and she welcomes everybody and does her thing, and... And then he showed up with the Command Master Chief of the Air Force, and they took questions. And then there were speakers, pretty interesting, right? There was a speaker from a guy from Air Force Installations, right, from the Secretary of the Air Force's office. Yeah, Tenant Bill of Rights and all that kind of crap. Yeah, that dude. And then there was a woman who did child programs. And then there was a woman who did healthcare. And the woman who did healthcare was really good. Like, I should probably get her on and to talk healthcare, but she was great. She's great. She's funny. She's I think retired Air Force. And but she, you know, she speaks English and she knows bullshit, and she was great. So it's interesting. It was interesting. You know, on the show earlier this week, you know, I said that, you know, if the Tenant Bill of Rights didn't include, you know, the right to see the history of the property, if it didn't include a resolution mechanism when you have a dispute, and it doesn't include the right to withhold your payment to your satisfaction is met, then what good is it? So, right, he indicated that, you know, they were still trying to work through that. Well, I mean, that ain't good enough, man. Like, what's it going to take? What are they balking at relative to me being allowed to see what this home's been treated for? So anyway, so I sat and listened to all the panels, and then got up and did post-traumatic winning. And let me tell you, I'm normally impressed with my work, but yesterday was awesome. We took a break about an hour into it, and I was trying to get to the back room to get my business cards to put them on. I couldn't get there. Between, you know, people that just want to say, come up and say thank you, this is awesome, to people that have had some of the stuff that I talk about, even through the halfway point in their life, to walk up to you with tears in your eyes. I don't want to say it was overwhelming, but it was almost overwhelming. And again, it just points out to me the number of people out there, right, that have these things in their lives, and we don't speak to them. The programs that get created by the Department of Defense, don't speak to them. And all of a sudden, some dude who's just speaking plain English, telling you about life, is somehow or other makes it make sense. And I met so many people yesterday, and then got up and finished it. And we started about 15 minutes late. And so I'm looking at the clock, and I know the times in my head. And so I look at Dawn in front of everybody, and she's sitting in front. I said, "Can I have 10 minutes to finish this thing? We started 15 minutes late." And she's like, I said, can I? And then she started laughing. Pretty unprofessional to do that in public, but, you know, come on. What is she going to say? No? So anyway, and so she looks at it, she stands up and she says, what do you think? And they're like, yes. And I was like, yes. So anyway, I finish, I got standing ovation. Yeah. And then whenever that happens, I always think, damn it. Where's my mom when I need her? Where's my mom when I needed her to be here? Again, reinforcing the idea that I'm not the jackass that she thought I was. Anyway, no, my mom would, as I've said before, my mom would love this. My mom would absolutely love it. She would correct me probably more than once if she sat in there. You know, Michael. You know, my mom only saw me speak in public once. I went to speak at my nephew's Eagle Scout. They present an award in Indianapolis where my youngest sister and her husband at the time was a former Marine officer who served with me. We were platoon commanders together at 1st Light Armored Vehicle Battalion back in the 1980s. So Otto Frenzel. So he called me and said, hey, man, would you come and speak and present the award to the Eagle Scout of the Year? I said, of course I would, man. And so he said, can you wear your desert uniform? I said, yeah, I'm a reservist, man. I could do anything. So so I go to Indianapolis, and my mom was living there. And, you know, it was cool. I mean, my mom getting a chance to see me speak in public. And, you know, and I'm halfway decent at it. And so she came up to me before I spoke, and she said, I'm excited to hear you talk. I said, thanks, Mom. I said, I'm going to try not to screw it up. she said to me, you'll do fine. I said, thanks. I think I will. And so the interesting thing about that day was, so I get there and I'm talking, and the award's named after a Marine lieutenant who was killed in Vietnam. His mother and brother were there for the award presentation. And the mother, the brother told me that his brother had gone to law school, but he joined the Marine Corps and he became an infantry officer. And he had been wounded. And he had the opportunity to come home. But he didn't. He went back to his unit. And he said, you know, we've always lived with that. We've always lived with that. And I looked at him and I said, he would have never thought to come home. Just so you know that. I said, the kind of guy your brother was, and you know, obviously his brother was an Eagle Scout. The kind of guy your brother was, that thought never went through his head. And he just looked at me. I said, just so you know, it's not like he considered it, and then he rejected it. He never considered it. His place was where he died, which was leading his Marines, who he loved and cared about. And, you know, he looks at me, and his eyes fill up with tears, and he says, wow. He said, I never thought of that. And he said, I'd like you to meet my mom. I said, is she here? He said, no. And so I spoke. Afterwards, my mom comes up to me. And she patted me on the forearm with her hand. And she said, you did really good. I like the way you do that. and I remember, you know, laughing, right? I was, thanks, Mom. But it was the only time she ever saw me speak in public. And so they were then serving food, right? They were having barbecue and food was really good. And so I got something to eat and I found the guy who the trophy's named after, his brother and his mom, who were having lunch. So I sat down. I said, do you mind if I join you? And they said, no. And so, you know, we were chit-chat talking, and, you know, she talked about, and during my remarks, I talked about what an honor it was, you know, to present this award. You know, I talked about the history of the award and who he was. And so I was sitting there with his mother, and I said, could I tell you something about your son? And she said, sure. And I said, I don't know him, but I know 1,000 copies of him. And I said, and I just want you to know that he never thought about coming home. And she just looked at me. And she says, I've always struggled with that. And I said, it never went through his head that he should go home. What went through his head was that he should be leading his Marines. And I think he died during in 1968. So it was during or in the aftermath of Tet. And I said, if he had the ability to go back and lead his Marines, you know, given what I've learned about your son today, he never, ever thought about coming home. Ever. He wouldn't have done that. He knew that he had a moral obligation to lead the Marines that he loved and cared about and had taken care of for the past year. And her eyes filled up with tears. And she said, I've struggled with that. She said, thank you so much for telling me that. I said, no, I know that. Right? In the aftermath, you would have heard, well, he could have come home. But if a doctor looked at him and said, hey, well, you can go, he would have said, get out of here. Where's my stuff? That's how much consideration he would have given that. So, you know, we finished lunch and then we socialized. And then they got ready to leave and she came over to me. And she looked at me and she smiled and she said, thank you for easing an old lady's mind. Now I said, well, ma'am, it's the truth. I didn't say that to make you feel good. I mean, if I could, I would in any way, shape, or form ease your pain. But I tell you that because I know it's the truth. I know it's the truth. I've seen it. I've seen guys with parts of their body blown off arguing with doctors not to send them to Germany because if they go to Germany, they're going to get sent home to the United States. I know Marines who've taken uniforms from other Marines, got on an airplane going back to Iraq to go rejoin their unit after they've been medevaced, and then only to be found out and then sent back home because they're physically too broken. Right? Again, I had an Army surgeon come to us once and say, I don't know what you do to these guys, but I've never had people argue with me, right, on the operating table that I've got to send them back to their unit. I've never had that experience. And these guys do it all the time. Doc, you can't send me to Germany. You can't send me home. And I said, it's the truth, you know. And I said, I'm just so happy that, you know, my brother-in-law, you know, asked me to be here so I could meet you, because that's just the truth, ma'am. So it was very cool. That was the only time my mom saw me speak. So that's the thought that goes through my head, right? My mom and kind of that story and whatnot. So anyway, but you know, and then after the event, pandemonium, right? People standing in line to talk to you, and they all have very personal stories about their own trauma, about their experiences as key wives, as other people, you know, they're the person now that somebody younger comes to and with their problems. I'm alone. I'm married. I'm 19. We have a baby. My husband's been gone for 5 months. And so they get all those problems. And so it's really, it was an awesome, awesome, awesome afternoon. And then after that, I got a chance to meet and speak to General Goldfein for a bit. And that was awesome too. And, you know, he thanked me for coming and do it. And I said no. And so hopefully going to do some more work with the Air Force. And I just told him that, hey, you guys can turn this around. You know, that 20% decline in the Marine Corps suicide rate, I can tell you about that. And he smiled and he said, I've heard. And so I, it was an awesome, awesome day. And so again, a bit of seed planting, relative to post-traumatic winning. But again, it just constantly reinforces that we're missing it with these programs. I mean, we're straight up missing it. We're whiffing it. They are designed by people who don't know how to bring it, who don't know how to articulate it. And then when all of a sudden some bozo does, you have this incredible outpouring. The other thing I'll tell you so doing this is, I call it, you know, some days I can get through it okay. And then other days I struggle, you know, just to talk about it. And I know it comes out of nowhere, right? But I will tell you this. I mean, there's things that happen when you do it and this is not the first time I've done it with an audience of women, but they react to certain things like men don't, or mixed groups don't. And so when I talk about the murder of my nephews, I mean, you can hear an audible gasp in the room. And it's like, you know, you're talking about it and you're on this course and then you hear that gasp, right? And for some reason it changes. It affects me, right? And then it's like, oh, I have to stop. I have to stop. And you know, I tell the part about being at the cemetery a year later and my oldest son asking me, Dad, do you think it hurt? And, you know, they react to that too. And so it's but again, it's something they don't expect, right? I mean, post-traumatic winning, Marine, they expect Marine-centric stuff. And then they hear Elizabeth Smart and they hear Peggy and they hear that you should talk to your spouse. And they're like, okay, who is this dude, man? Because, you know, I've never seen anything like this. And he's speaking things that I know are true. And he's telling me about this fourth path that any of us can walk and live great lives. So anyway, exciting stuff. Exciting stuff. And just a wonderful, wonderful experience. My first trip to Orlando in spite of the traffic. And then I went and had dinner at Joe's Crab Shack, which is really overrated if you want an opinion. So anyway, the servers were nice. So they got Joe's Crab Shack has good servers. The food pretty much mass produced and not so much. Anyway, Whitney Houston sings the national anthem. The chef's going to join us this morning. So good morning to you. Yeah. And this is dedicated to a lot of different people that made yesterday just an awesome experience. The staff that helped get me back there was awesome. But the invitation, first and foremost, from Dawn Goldfein, is dedicated to her and the work she does in a very graceful, humorous, and self-deprecating way. And then, to all those, spouses that came from all over the world to come to this event as they, try to do better for families relative to healthcare, relative to education, relative to housing. And those women have stepped up to make a difference. And then just to everybody I met who came up and was so thankful, so supportive, right? And just a simply delightful, wonderful experience yesterday. So this is dedicated to all those Air Force women. Thank you very much. But it helps when I play the right thing, right? So, yeah, this is dedicated to them.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me. I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, we'll check the weather in Marineland. And then pretty interesting little event happened in Syria yesterday, in case you didn't notice it. 22 Syrian soldiers were killed in an airstrike in Syria. Who's flying jets and dropping bombs in Syria? Couldn't be the Russians, could it? Interesting. And typically, right? Guess who's denied doing it? Exactly. The Russians. And how do we know the Russians are lying? Because their lips are moving. Okay? It's what Russians do. Led by Dr. Evil, the liar in chief. Yeah, anyway. All right. Back to the weather we go. As I get ready to head down to Northport, Florida, a couple hours south of here, go watch the Yankees for a little while and the Braves. And then get on the road before rush hour starts and get up to Orlando Airport before I fly out. So yeah, that's what I got going on. So this is doing the weather a couple hours before normal. Cloudy and 37 in Quantico. Sunny and 41 down at Camp Lejeune, a little bit north of me. And so a little bit cooler temperatures. It's only supposed to get to about 61 or 62 here in the middle part of Florida today. So you see that weather reflected on the east coast of the country. Dark cloudy and 53, 29 Palms, so warmer on the west coast. Dark cloudy and 53 at Camp Pendleton. Dark cloudy 67 in Hawaii at Camp Smith. Camp Butler in Okinawa. Dark cloudy and 65. And evening just falling in Afghanistan. It's warmed up there. Clear, dark, and 57. And late in the afternoon in Ramadi, it's almost 70, 68 degrees in the Al Anbar province. That is a look at your weather. When we come back, we'll check the top five stories in Early Bird. And then I'm off to the ball game. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good,
are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255. And press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
In addition to the coronavirus, the top story in the news today, in my humble opinion, is comes out of Syria. And the Russians, who are straddling about six different fences right now in the Middle East, are denying that they were it was their airstrike that killed 33 Turkish soldiers, right? And so this thing's just begun. Wait till you see the funerals in Turkey, right? Russian military officials denied responsibility on Friday for an airstrike in northern Syria that killed dozens of Turkish troops as the risk of major military confrontation between Russia and Turkey in the region escalated sharply. What? Yeah, remember we talked? Hey, you want a larger roll in that shit sandwich there, Vladimir? How about it? But just know this, it's not going to end well. Well, as usual, Vladimir always has a better solution, right? Russia's Ministry of Defense said in a statement that no Russian jets had been operating in the area of the strike carried out Thursday in Idlib province. Quote, aircraft of the Russian Air Force did not engage in combat in the Bihum vicinity, the ministry said. Ragmi Dogan, governor of Haytay province in Turkey, announced that 33 soldiers were killed. Dozens more were reported wounded. Dozens. The Russian statement said Moscow had warned Syria to cease attacks on anti-regime fighters in the Bayum area when it became aware of Turkish casualties. As soon as the information about Turkish casualties was received, the Russian side took comprehensive measures to fully stop the firing by the Syrian forces and ensure the firing by Syrian forces, implying that what? It was ground combat that led to this. To ensure safe evacuation of the dead and injured Turkish service members to Turkish territory, the ministry said. Of course, the Russians always act responsibly. The defense ministry added that Turkey's military had not provided Russia with the geolocation of its forces in Bayan. Quote, at the same time, according to the coordinates provided by the Turkish side to the Russian Center for Reconciliation, there were no and should not have been any units of the Turkish armed forces in the area of Bayan, the Russian defense ministry said. Turkey is a NATO member, even though it doesn't act like one very often. That's me, not the article. Turkey convened an emergency meeting of the alliance's ambassadors on Friday morning. Oh, now this is a NATO event. Stopping short of an attempt to invoke NATO's all-for-one, one-for-all mutual defense pact, but drawing the group into an increasingly tense situation. Give me a fucking break. That's laughable. Now we're going to play the NATO card when you said you don't want any part of NATO? Okay, Ergodan, you're a genius too. Figure it the fuck out. I find it honestly, you know, again, I mean, not the tragedy of 33 guys in the military just doing their jobs, right? They're dead, and there'll be more that die of wounds. So that number is going to go up, right? That's the horrible part of this. But assholes like Erdogan and Putin and Bashar al-Assad, it's great when they all get in the same asshole sandwich, right? Under NATO's founding treaty, any member can request consultations if it believes its security is under threat. It is only the sixth time in NATO's 71-year history that a member has done so. Wow. I mean, the unmitigated gall of Turkey, right? And what are they doing? Their message sending to the Russians. Hey, we're not afraid to do this. We'll call in our NATO friends now. And in spite of us telling NATO to stick it up their ass, and in spite of us moving to be our own Islamic Republic thing, in spite of all that, you know, we'll play the NATO card if we have to. Politicians, man, they're just like total garbage. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg spoke Thursday night to Turkish Foreign Minister Mehmet Cavusoglu. NATO said in a statement, quote, Stoltenberg condemned the continued indiscriminate airstrikes by the Syrian regime and its backer Russia in Idlib province. Stoltenberg told reporters in Brussels, now this is from the Washington Post, by the way, in Brussels on Friday after the meeting of ambassadors, quote, allies offered their deepest condolences for the death of Turkish soldiers in last night's bombing in Idlib and expressed full solidarity with Turkey. We call on Russia and the Assad regime to stop the airstrikes. And then they said, you're on your own, bud. Good luck. See if there's any further quotes, especially Russian ones, because So that's a pretty big story. I'm not going to lie to you. That's a pretty big story today. So that in the news. And let's take a look at the top five stories in Early Bird. The Continental Marine Corps has gone on a social media offensive this week. And yesterday, was it yesterday or Wednesday, when he did the Confederate thing? I was thinking of it, and I was like, like, what is he talking about? We don't have, like, Confederate monuments on the, you know, we don't have that kind of stuff, right? We don't have bases named after Confederate generals. And I was thinking, like, what is he talking about? And so there's an article, like, there's an article talking about paraphernalia, which is Confederate flags. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Because I think there's a First Amendment issue there. That you have a right as an American. Now, does that butt up against the UCMJ and good order and discipline? So we'll see it. We'll see. So I don't know. I mean, to me, it wasn't very well articulated, and that's in the news today. We'll get to that here in a second. But top five stories in Early Bird as I get ready to go to the ball game. Yeah, fired up about that. Number one, VA secretary. Now, this story's been in the news for a while, and it evidently has developed legs. The story is that the Secretary of Veterans, Mr. Wilkie, that... He attempted to discredit a staffer's claim of a sexual assault by investigating her background. Yeah, that's not something that you do anymore. That's like Harvey Weinstein shit, okay? When you're part of the president's cabinet, you're supposed to, you know, turn this over to the appropriate people and allow them to do it. You're not supposed to go like Ray Mabus on everybody. Okay. Second story, CENTCOM suspends leave and liberty for troops over coronavirus fear. Yeah, so the whole coronavirus thing, like engulfing the planet. We'll see how far it goes. The Israelis say that, look, we were working on this thing, and we just chose the coronavirus because it is in the family of, like, bronchial virus, and we're within weeks of having a vaccine. So anyway, interesting story. You could check that out. But yeah, they said just by coincidence, we've been working on this. Number three, post 9/11 veterans attribute deadly cancers to contaminant at an Uzbek base. We know that. Four, military judge finds for the state of Washington's naval base Kitsap that those funds that were earmarked to go to the base for military construction cannot go to the border wall. So the Trump administration will obviously appeal that. But, yeah. interesting. Who took that case to court? So let me, I was just reading kind of a little blurb about it. Who sued the federal government? The city? The base, I'm sure the base didn't sue him. A case brought by Washington Attorney General Bob Ferguson. Must be a Democrat, right? Gotta be. So the Attorney General, State of Washington, sued President. Number nine, Pentagon's policy chief's firing was part of a White House purge. Yeah, again, you know, you want to play, you know, political reindeer games and you're on the wrong side in politics. You know, to me, these, you know, it's like, oh, he was a civil servant just doing their job. I don't know, man. It seems like a lot of civil servants, right, don't do that anymore. So if you get on the wrong side of that as a civil servant, right, you risk the franchise, in my opinion. And if you're too stupid to figure that out, then I think it's a Darwin type of event. Headline, all Confederate-related paraphernalia should be removed from Marine bases, the Commandant directs. Now, This is in Marine Corps Times. Director was part of a memo Berger sent to the Assistant Commandant of the Marine Corps, Gary Thomas. The memo included several other items for immediate action, including increasing gender integration, potential changes to Marine Corps maternity leave policy, which, you know, the Commandant took to Twitter. But again, it was pretty vague. Many of the tasks were published on Twitter on Friday. Other tasks not previously published were mostly administrative. So, again, this is, you know, this is a brief article, but I don't think people understand what it means. The Marine Corps doesn't have Confederate monuments. So what does it mean? Telling people they got to take, if some kid from Georgia has a Confederate, you know, bumper sticker on his truck, hey, you know, you got to take that off. So I don't rightly know. And, yeah. The other story in Marine Corps Times. There's two of them. Marine Corps to pivot on critical fighting systems, but the Commandant still vague on details. You know, I have to tell you, this whole I've got a secret thing, I don't get it. When General Gray rolled out maneuver warfare, man, he put it in front of God and everybody and say, let's fight about it. Let's talk about it. You know, and it seems like General Berger, you know, I've got a secret, right? And you hear bits and pieces, like there are going to be no tanks in the Marine Corps. There's going to be no this in the Marine Corps. There's going to be no that in the Marine Corps. The whole Marine Corps is going to be lined up to fight in the South China Sea, which makes no sense, right? Because normally the fight you gear towards is not the fight you actually undertake. And the Marine Corps' utility has always been, it's the best Swiss Army knife on the planet. It's light enough to go and do things. It's also heavy enough to go and do other things. So we're not going to be that anymore, you know? And so, I mean, we can have that discussion. And to me, it would be an interesting discussion to have. But we're playing I've Got a Secret. And so that, to me, is a bit concerning. It's a bit concerning. Fundamentally change the character of the Marine Corps, and you're going to do it, you know, behind closed doors. So, anyway, on Thursday, Marine Corps Commandant David Berger told the House Armed Service Committee this year that time for the service to pivot, but that the budget for fiscal year 22 and 23 will show significant more changes, new priorities, right? Anti-ship missiles, blah, 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 blah. But beyond that, still vague. So anyway, to me, come on, man, bring it out of the closet. Let's fight about it. Have the discussion and let's move on. Okay. So I have to tell you that I'm not a fan of the whole I've got a secret thing. I've got a secret. So anyway, we'll take a break. The chef's going to join me next. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.